What's going on, Tula Rosa Basin and those listening on the World Wide Web? It's Double J with another edition of Pass the Popcorn, my review of movies currently showing at Allen Theaters, Aviator 10. You know, 1982 was without a doubt one of the best years in cinematic history for iconic movie releases. I mean, think about it. We were introduced to Elliot and E.T., Jeff Spicoli at Ridgemont High, a troubled Vietnam vet named John Rambo, a barbarian named Conan, a video game hero named Tron, and a man named Garp. Even in 1982, sequels were the rage. Spock died in Star Trek II Wrath of Khan, Balboa took on Mr. T in Rocky III, Mel's Max got even madder in The Road Warrior, and we also had some other less than shining examples of next chapters. Halloween 3, Friday the 13th Part 3, Amityville 2, The Possession, Airplane 2, Death Wish 2, and who could forget Grease 2? You want your scares? Well, besides some of the aforementioned sequels, Tiny Heather O'Rourke uttered, "They're here!" In Poltergeist, Kurt Russell battled John Carpenter's The Thing, and Horror Meister, Stephen King served up five stories in his ode to EC Comics called Creepshow. Comedy? Absolutely. We had Raunchy with Porky's, a buddy comedy called 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte, not one but two from funny man Richard Pryor, the concert film Live on Sunset Strip, and opposite comedic legend Jackie Gleason in The Toy. We had a guy pretending to be a woman with Dustin Hoffman and Tootsie. We also saw a woman pretending to be a man pretending to be a woman. That would be Julie Andrews and James Garner in Victor Victoria. And don't forget about the musicals Annie and Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. 1982 would also produce some memorable Oscar winners like Richard Gere, Deborah Winger, and Academy Award winner Louis Gossett Jr. in An Officer and a Gentleman. Another statue for Meryl Streep in Sophie's Choice, and many, many awards, including Best Actor, Best Director, and Best Motion Picture for Gandhi. Pretty amazing that all those came out in 1982. And then there's Blade Runner. I was a 13-year-old high school freshman that summer, and after being wowed by E.T. and scared silly by Poltergeist and The Thing, I didn't know what to expect. But this was Harrison freaking Ford, who in my mind could do no wrong. He was Han Solo. He was Indiana Jones. He was Colonel Barnesby from Force 10 from Navarone. There's one you haven't heard from in a while. But I wasn't prepared for him as Deckard, a retired cop who was called back into action to retire four renegade replicants in a dystopian Los Angeles circa 2019. Which, come to think about it, that's only 2 years from now. To quote in that IBM commercial way back when, "Where are all the flying cars? We were promised flying cars." The movie was slow. It was dark. It had lots of speeches. Harrison Ford's narration didn't help, and I was bored. Come on, I was 13. What did I know? It would be years before I revisited the movie with the release of the Final Cut Edition. With it, I found a new respect for the vision director Ridley Scott had. When they omitted Ford's droning, monotonous narration, I was able to start paying attention to what was truly magnificent. A vision of the future that is still memorable, filled with dark decay in a world that successfully had consumed itself in the name of progress. The film had phenomenal special effects that still hold up today. The eerie, synthesized music of Vangelis, Sean Young, Demure, and Doe-Eye. The fanboy question of whether Deckard himself was actually a replicant. But it was arguably Rutger Hauer's lead replicant Roy Batty that stole the show. A tortured, confused, and angry soul so intent on killing just so he could live. And there's not a nerd alive who doesn't revel in his final rain-soaked death song. All those moments will be lost in time like tears in the rain. Time to die. Which brings us to Blade Runner 2049 and where I have to start being evasive and withholding. I'm a firm believer in the no spoilers clause, and BR 2049 is at its best when you know less about it going in. If the cinematic world of 2019 was bleak, well, this world is just absolutely sterile. Ryan Gosling is the title character, a Blade Runner who does his job with minimal emotion or empathy, a Sergeant Joe Friday, if you will, for the new millennium. But when a routine retirement uncovers a decades-old mystery, we're introduced to the Wallace Corporation. Jared Leto at his most subdued is Neander Wallace, who took the world out of the blackout, which is a cataclysmic event we've missed in between movies, and into a brave new world filled with futuristic candy to sate the senses. Along the way, he buys the bankrupt Tyrell Corporation and starts mass-producing replicants again. But as opposed to Deckard's generation murderous robots, these are new and improved and safe and have integrated themselves as upstanding members of society. What could go wrong? Gosling has to uncover truths buried, Harrison Ford's Rick Deckard is found when he doesn't want to be, and the same question asked in 1982 is asked again 35 years later, what is the definition of humanity? This movie succeeds on so many different levels. I have told many people that this movie alone is a reason for me to buy into the 4K world of television. The special effects are breathtaking. The soundtrack equally as pulse-pounding. Speaking of pounding, Aviator 10 had the subwoofer cranked the night we watched it. Apparently, their amplifiers go to 11. In praising the actors, Ryan Gosling is going to be overlooked because the true stars of this film are the ladies. Ana de Armas as Gosling's girlfriend Joy, Robin Wright as his boss, Sylvia Hoax as Wallace's right-hand woman Love are all scene stealers, relegating Ryan to the background. Now, somehow Harrison Ford has transformed himself into playing everyone's favorite grumpy relative. Oh, you'll have to forgive Grandpa Ford. He likes to growl at people. But just like its predecessor, Blade Runner 2049 succeeds with visuals first, actors second, and then story in that order. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It succeeds because the director has taken Ridley Scott and author Philip K. Dick's child and transformed it into something new, yet familiar. An exciting film that is a triumph, giving us something to digest that is both tasty and satisfying, not unlike Reese's Pieces from the year 1982. 5 out of 5 bags of popcorn, one of the best films I've seen this year. For showtimes, call 437-9301 or jump onto the web at allentheatersinc.com and click on Alamogordo. Check back with us next week when Jackie Chan tries to avenge the death of his daughter in the action-packed thriller The Foreigner. For Allen Theater's Aviator 10 and Burt Broadcasting, I'm Double J. For Pass the Popcorn, and I'll see you at the movies.